What's up, everybody? Matt Gajewski here, back again with the Osmo Fantasy Football YouTube channel, continuing our division previews. We're about halfway, and today we are talking the NFC North, near and dear to my heart, living up in Wisconsin, so we get to finally talk about my Green Bay Packers and Chicago Bears. Nick, how you doing this morning? This is Nick Lepre, by the way, guys, at Notorious Fantasy. He'll be with me on all these previews, and a fun division today. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great today, and I think that this is a very exciting division, despite, you know, the first two teams we're going to be talking about not being the most interesting in terms of a team in the NFL that could have a big play this year, right? These are not going to be playoff teams. I'd be shocked if they were, but this is going to be a fun division to talk about as a whole, especially in terms of fantasy football.
I agree, and to give you guys the rundown, if you've never seen these division previews, one, we have a bunch of them already out, and we'll continue through the early part of summer. But this is going to be an overarching look at all these teams, roster building, what they've done in the draft and free agency. Have they made coaching changes? What does that kind of affect their win total? We'll be looking at everything, and we'll get into fantasy football as well, highlighting underdog and best ball this offseason. But before we get started, make sure to hit that thumbs up button, subscribe to the video, and hit the notification bell so you know when this and all other content goes live. We have two teams projected for 6.5 wins. So I'll give you the decision. Do you want to start with the Chicago Bears or you want to start with the Detroit Lions? We're going to start worst to first.
All right, let's go with the Bears because I think they will be the worst.
I agree with you. I was kind of surprised they had the same win total. And the Chicago Bears, it's sitting at 6.5. The same with the Lions here. But we have a lot of coaching changes to get into with the Chicago Bears. Matt Eberflus comes in from Indianapolis. He was the defensive coordinator there from 2018 to 2021. They bring in Luke Getsy as their OC. He was previously with the Packers, their quarterbacks coach and pass game coordinator. And they bring in Alan Williams as their defensive coordinator. He was coaching DBs under Eberflus with the Colts from 2018 to 2021. But when we look at this team from a roster building perspective, it's kind of tough for a guy like Justin Fields. You know, he comes in with a lame duck coaching staff. They're all gone now. Now he has a new coaching staff, not tied to him whatsoever. And first thing we saw this team do, they invested in just about everything except weapons to help Justin Fields. So we can talk a little bit about their roster, but what do you think this coaching staff is trying to do in year one? Because to me, it just looks like they're trotting out the guys they have and seeing what they get. Otherwise, they're just all in on the future. I mean, there's not much to look forward to this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you are a Bears fan, I'm not necessarily going to say that you were excited about the coach. I don't think that Eberflus is a bad coach or anything, but when you draft a young quarterback, typically if I was a fan of the Bears, I would want a more offensive-minded head coach, and that's just my thoughts on that. Again, I'm not saying that I think that this is a bad move for the Bears. I mean, you could have put me or Matt as the head coach of the Bears, and it might end up better than what they had with Matt Nagy. That guy was a certified dumbass. So at least with Eberflus here, the Chicago Bears should have a better opportunity to play a little bit better. They do end up getting rid of a couple pieces on defense. Obviously, the biggest of that being Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack isn't the same as he was a couple of years ago, right, where he was one of the more dominant defensive players in the NFL, but he's also no schlub, and they kind of just traded him for a bag of potato chips, but it is what it is. I think that this is going to be a decent team going forward, but this year there is very little to be excited about. And like you said, they're kind of just trotting out an offense that, like, do they even have like a NFL wide receiver one? I like Darnell Mooney. I think he's fun for fantasy, but in terms of real life, he's not a real number one guy in my book.
Yeah, I think there's a couple problems here for Chicago. Usually when you have a young signal caller, when you're looking at front office and like GMs and people that are actually making hiring decisions, generally you want to get an offensive-minded head coach. If we have an offensive coordinator in Luke Getsy who succeeds, he could be looking at a head coaching job next year. And then you have Justin Fields going through another transition. So that's going to be tough. But under Eberflus, you also have the issue of how much does this regime actually like Fields? Another thing we see teams do with young signal callers is surround them with talent because we need to actually evaluate what Fields has. These moves in the offseason suggest to me that they might not be all in on Fields to begin with. I mean, you look at the exiting pieces. It's not just Allen Robinson. You had a lot of role players leave this offense to, like Marquise Goodwin, Jakeem Grant, Amir Byrd, and those players aren't fantastic. But who did they replace them with? You have Byron Pringle. You have Equanimeous St. Brown coming over in free agency. Neither are getting paid very much. Byron Pringle more so than St. Brown, who's essentially on a UDFA deal, and he might not even make the roster. You draft Velus Jones, who's a 25-year-old prospect, transferred all around college and never truly produced at that level. You take him on day two. It's a bit concerning to me. And then you look at what they have. It's basically just Cole Kmet, Darnell Mooney, and then whatever you think David Montgomery gives you in the pass game. You already mentioned some of the defensive issues they have, so I won't belabor this point, but you do lose key pieces like Khalil Mack. And that suggests to me, again, this team is just going full rebuild. And then on defense, you know, they invest two of their premier picks in Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, two defensive backs. I mean, you'd expect that from a defensive-minded head coach, but not a guy who's trying to evaluate what he has at signal caller. So just a lot of curious offseason moves for me, in my opinion. But what do you make of some of the other moves they made? It's tough for me to really get all in on Fields just because of the weapons around him.
Yeah, you can tell that the perception on a team, especially in terms of offensively, just doesn't look great when there's only two players being drafted on their team inside of the top 100 based upon current underdog ADP, that being David Montgomery inside the top 50 and then Darnell Mooney inside the top 70. That does not make me very confident at all that even really anyone, even the normal fantasy player, is confident at all in the Chicago Bears offense. The most interesting player here by far for me has to be David Montgomery. I don't think they made necessarily the correct moves to elevate his skill set to maybe build him like an amazing offensive line or something, but the backs behind him like Khalil Herbert don't really concern me at all. And I feel as though David Montgomery has a pretty clear stranglehold over this backfield. And with the little pieces they have, like you said, when you bring in Byron Pringle and you draft a guy out of the retirement home in Velus Jones, how confident are you that they're going to be this crazy pass offense if they can keep games close somehow? I think David Montgomery sees a lot of work, and I think he also gets a lot of receiving work opportunity this year. And he's a guy that I'm definitely drafting ahead of ADP, and I could easily see finishing inside the top 10, despite the team being so bad.
We've seen it multiple times. Backs on bad teams, if they have the opportunity, they still can produce, especially if they're pass-catching backs. A guy like James Robinson, who played for league-worst Jacksonville Jaguars a few years ago, is racking up a lot of those points via PPR receptions. And David Montgomery has occupied that role to this point in his career. And I don't really see any reason why Khalil Herbert or anyone would take that from him. Herbert does have some contingency value in terms of best ball, just because he's going at pick 170. He's just inside the last rounds. So, I mean, if Montgomery goes down, Herbert's your handcuff you'd like. I think you could maybe get some value drafting the really late guys from Chicago. The problem is for me, it's like, who do we go with? Probably Pringle. He's going at pick 211 right now. Velus Jones is going at 213. I wrote Daz Newsome down on our show sheet because he was the guy they actually took a pick on last year. And I think there's a chance maybe it's even him. You know, I think it's just as likely that he doesn't make the team, but that just tells you how volatile this receiving core is outside of Darnell Mooney. Is there any guy you'd plant your flag on, or are you just kind of out on these guys altogether?
Well, I do like Darnell Mooney, but that's like a cop-out answer, right?
He's outside of Mooney. Like Mooney's like locked in, but...
Okay, yeah. I would just take the shot on Velus Jones, thinking that they drafted him, this regime drafted him, so maybe they will give him a little bit more playing time. I think Byron Pringle's pretty solid, but that might just be because he was on the Chiefs, right? That might just be because Pat Mahomes was throwing him the ball, and going from Pat Mahomes to Justin Fields is like going from a Lamborghini to a Honda Civic. So I think that, and I drive a Honda Civic, so you know, just diss myself. But I think that Byron Pringle could have some upside, but it's very limited by the fact that the Bears are just not very good. So in reality, unless you're just taking a crazy late round shot, maybe you see a picture of Velus Jones in the offseason and he's looking yoked, and then you go ahead and just draft him. That's how I think about it late on in drafts. Obviously, that's not how you should be thinking about it, but that's more of a joke. But I do like Velus Jones very late, taking the shot that he might be number two behind Mooney.
So what do you think about Fields then? I've heard a lot of people around the industry talking about Fields' legs, and he gives you a little bit of contingency upside because he can run. That's not something he's really ever done in his career, and I'm not sure Luke Getsy's going to do that. We've never seen it. He's been coordinating the pass in an Aaron Rodgers-led offense, so it's just not been a piece of their game. With Fields at Ohio State, he's mobile, don't get me wrong, but he's not a guy that takes off very often, and they've never used a lot of design runs with him. So I'm just not sure that at pick 133, there's enough upside to take Fields. I mean, he's not coming off the board early, but still, pick 133, there's serviceable players in that range. Is he a little bit higher for you lower than you. What do you think about Fields?
Yeah, the thing about Fields is, like you said, it's basically where he goes. I just feel a little bit more comfortable just not going that way. Now, obviously, when you're looking to build stacks, when you're looking to build bring backs, especially, I believe the Buffalo Bills are playing up against the Chicago Bears in week 16 or 17. So when I do have these Josh Allen stacks, I like to go ahead and draft a guy like Darnell Mooney, draft one of these guys later. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty much staying clear away from Justin Fields. I don't think he's worth where he is going. And again, the stack just isn't very enticing, right? How likely is it that Byron Pringle, Darnell Mooney, and Justin Fields ends up as one of the top stacks? Very low in my book. So I'm kind of staying away from Justin Fields. I think he's a talented player. I think he does have a little bit of rushing upside. But again, the rushing upside, he's not going to turn into Josh Allen. Maybe more of like a Pat Mahomes type rushing upside in my book.
I agree with you. And you bring up parts of the schedule. So 6.5 wins for me, it's a clear under. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the schedule the Bears play. It's a third place schedule. They face the AFC East in the crossover. They face the NFC East as their other division. And then they're getting one-offs from the NFC South, NFC West, and AFC South. Those aren't the toughest divisions. It's just, I think the Bears legitimately might be the worst team in football. And that's not an over I can ever back at 6.5. It's one of my heaviest positions towards the under. And a lot of these videos, we're talking about stay away bets. I firmly bet the under on the Bears win total, and I am not sure that I'm done betting it. What do you think about the win total?
I agree. I don't know why it's at 6.5. You would think that it would be closer to 5.5, maybe 5. Maybe they want you to push or something, the books, but 6.5 is just absolutely outrageous. I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the NFL. I think maybe that's going to be like the Falcons or one of the teams we talked about the other day, but I think that the Bears easily go under 6.5, and I'm shocked that it is this high.
Dude, we talked about the NFC South yesterday. The Carolina Panthers and the Falcons are projected for fewer wins overall than the Bears. And, you know, it's a different quarterback situation, but I think if you airdropped a serviceable quarterback onto any of these three teams, the Bears have a worse roster overall than the Panthers and the Falcons. I mean, man, it is a tough, tough place to play if you're Chicago. But let's get to Detroit. They're also projected for 6.5 wins. I think these two teams are going in different directions. For Detroit, you still don't have the quarterback. Now, that's going to be an issue for them, but Jared Goff has not been terrible. He's been serviceable. He's been to a Super Bowl, so you've seen what he can do when he's surrounded with talent, and the Lions have started to do that. It's mostly the same coaching staff coming back. You had Dan Campbell in his first year as head coach last year. You had Aaron Glenn, first year DC. They did make a change at OC. It's Ben Johnson this year. He's been promoted from within the offense. So I'm not expecting too many changes for Detroit. If anything, maybe just a little bit run heavier because they were so bad and in such negative game script last year. But this is a team that had a ton of draft capital. So when you look to the additions and subtractions this team made, a lot of it is going to be just pure additions. They draft Jameson Williams in the first round. They draft Aiden Hutchinson. So whenever you get two top 10 picks, that's going to look fantastic for your team moving forward. But it's not just that. They had some other players like DJ Chark comes in as a solid role player. On defense, you had a couple guys. They bring back, you know, like a Jared Davis, who they initially drafted. I don't really think you see too many difference makers on defense. What really, to me, is that you're getting back a lot of players healthy. You're getting back like a healthy Jeff Okuda, who was drafted inside the top 5. So if Jeff Okuda, who's been injured in his career, can play up to that level, you have a lot of potential on this offense. And it's not just from their current draft picks. It's from some other players that they're now getting back. So talk to me about Detroit, the OC change, and some of the roster changes you like for this team.
Yeah, I think that the Detroit Lions as a whole are one of the more interesting teams, more fascinating teams in football. I think they are not necessarily going to be one of the best teams in the NFL. That would be kind of crazy to say. But I do think that following Dan Campbell and the Lions last year was very fun. And I feel like they lost a couple of games that they probably should have won. If you remember that game up against the Baltimore Ravens where Justin Tucker kicked a ball from the parking lot and it somehow went in. I think that the Lions, you know, they got a little unlucky last year. Maybe some people think they shouldn't have won any games, right? Because on paper, this team stinks. But at the end of the day, I think this year they have built something good. And I think that if they keep Dan Campbell, that this team could be legitimate a couple of years from now. Now, Dan Campbell doesn't seem like the biggest X's and O's guy. He just doesn't seem like that. He seems like a highly motivating coach. He seems like the Kool-Aid man in the locker room, like to get you ready to run through a wall. So I'm excited about Dan Campbell. I think he's a very fun coach. And I think that this team is building for success. Like you said, when you can draft these upper echelon guys basically every year because the Lions are just so bad that eventually things are going to start to click. And Aiden Hutchinson, especially, I think is going to be very big for this team early on in his career. And I think Jameson Williams really helps out a wide receiver core. Like you said, they don't really have the quarterback. And while that's going to impact them this year, if you're looking for a couple of years out, if they say maybe they go under 6.5 wins, right? Maybe they win 4 games. Then in the future, if they draft one of these upper echelon quarterbacks that everyone is fanning over next year, then this could be a Detroit Lions team that has one of the quickest turnarounds I've ever seen. Now, technically, it's not a quick turnaround because they've been so bad for all these years. But talking about the new regime more, like Dan Campbell might be able to turn this around really quickly. But just speaking about 2022, I think that this is one of the more interesting teams. I think that they're going to go over 6.5 wins. And I think that all the moves they made were correct. I don't think Anthony Lynn really had it anymore, to be honest with you. I'm glad they got rid of him as the offensive coordinator.
All right, I want to parallel some of the roster positions that the Chicago Bears have versus the Detroit Lions. So Detroit, I think Jared Goff at quarterback, maybe you give the edge to Chicago. I think it's a toss-up. I'm not sure. Running back DeAndre Swift, I would prefer him to David Montgomery personally. And when you compare Jamal Williams, like the entire backfield, DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams versus just having David Montgomery, I'd rather have the Detroit backfield. The receiving core, no question. You have DJ Chark, Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, who they stole on day 3 last year, infinitely better. Tight end, TJ Hockenson, maybe close, but I would rather have the former first rounder than Cole Kmet. Offensive line, not even close. You have Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Penei Sewell, who they drafted last year. This is one of the better offensive lines in football. On defense, they have a lot invested on the defensive line. You have Hutchinson. They also got Josh Pascal out of Kentucky this year. They took a couple day 2 guys on the interior last year, and Alim McNeil and Levi Onwuzurike. Linebacker is not a position of strength for the Detroit Lions, so I think you could maybe give the edge to Chicago there. But then even on the back end, you still have Jeff Okuda. You have players like Mike Hughes coming in. You have Amani Aruwariye. And they also drafted Kirby Joseph at safety, and they took him fairly high. So I think there's even an argument that Detroit might have the better secondary. I think Detroit probably wins both games against Chicago this year. And then you look at the rest of their schedule, they're playing 4th place. So again, you're getting AFC East, NFC East. But then from the NFC South, you draw the Panthers. I think that's solid. From the NFC West, you're getting the Seahawks. I think that's a pretty solid matchup. And then from the AFC South, you get the Jaguars. Like, Detroit might win 8 games this year with Jared Goff. I like the over too. Anything you'd like to add there?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. I really like the over as well. Like you said, 8 games, 9 games would be a little bit crazy, but they're definitely going to win more than 6.5 games. I think that 8 games should be pretty easy for the Lions, especially with the schedule that they're playing now. Maybe you give the Lions the schedule of the Packers, and then you're like, oh, wow, over 6.5 is fucking impossible. But based upon the schedule that they're playing, I really like the over 6.5. And I truly do believe that Jared Goff is a little bit better than what people give him the credit for. He's not an elite quarterback. He'll probably lose his job next year, but he's not this schlub that can't do anything that a lot of people kind of put onto him, right? That's what a lot of people say about him. So in terms of fantasy football, just real quick, my favorite pick outside of the top 100 in fantasy drafts, one of my favorite picks right now is DJ Chark. I think DJ Chark still has a little bit of gas left in him, and I think that maybe Jameson Williams, if he doesn't have impact day 1, I think that DJ Chark could be pretty valuable for fantasy. Again, when you're talking about a guy getting drafted outside of the top 150, there's a lot of luck that goes into it. There's a lot of situation that needs to happen. But I think DJ Chark still does have a little bit of gas left in the tank. We did see a couple years ago, he was looking like a very promising young wide receiver, suffered a bunch of injuries. He was on the Jaguars. Now he goes to the Lions, obviously not the biggest of step-ups, but I think that DJ Chark could have some solid impact going outside the top 150.
Yeah, one last thing on the schedule. The Lions are 31st in travel. They only travel 8 time zones the whole year, so very favorable schedule compared to what you see with some teams in the coast. For best ball purposes, I'm still in on Amon-Ra St. Brown, so I'd like to hear you talk about him too. He's coming off the board at pick 71.5. Jameson Williams tore his ACL in the college football playoff, so he's going to be about 6-7 months removed from the injury when the season starts. That's an injury that generally takes 9 months to a year, so I think predicting him to play 16 games is quite generous. When you draft DJ Chark and Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think there's a chance you get a much higher target share in the beginning of the year. And then, again, he's coming off a season-ending injury, like a year-long recovery for some players. If Jameson Williams starts slow and never quite gets up to speed his rookie year, that's not out of the realm of possibility. And I'm on Ross St. Brown checked every single box you'd want from a rookie last year. Some of the target share numbers were inflated because of injuries to Swift and Hockenson at various points in the year. But when you look at efficiency and yards per route run, Amon Ross St. Brown is up there with some of the leaders that we saw in the rookie class last year, which is something we definitely need to see moving forward. So I like Amon Ra a lot at 71.4. I think there's a ton of upside with him for a guy that's already shown it. I'm also interested in Jamal Williams, just super late. Pick 182 is a little bit ridiculous for a guy that has standalone value in this offense. DeAndre Swift is not a bell cow back. But what do you think about those two players?
Yeah, so when it comes to Amon Ross St. Brown, you asked me like maybe a month or two ago, I was like sky high on Amon Ross St. Brown. I was talking about, oh, maybe he could finish inside the top 12. I've kind of cooled down a little bit on that, but I still do think he could easily be a top 24 wide receiver. We saw down the stretch last year, the target numbers that this guy was getting was bananas, right? He's getting like 10, 11, 12 targets a game. And while I don't expect him to keep up that high amount of targets per game, maybe he gets more receptions. Maybe the team plays a little bit better. Maybe he's able to get more receiving yards. Maybe he's able to get more receiving touchdowns. And if the target share dips a little bit, because again, like you mentioned, Jameson Williams is still probably not going to be there early on in the season. And if that is the case, then Amon-Ra St. Brown is the clear number one guy. While I do like DJ Chark, DJ Chark has, in my opinion, no shot to out receive or to like move up the depth chart past Amon-Ra St. Brown to be the number one target. So I think that St. Brown is going to have yet another great year. Again, he is linked to Jared Goff. It is what it is. St. Brown was able to perform with Goff. Pretty sure Goff got hurt last year and he performed with other quarterbacks as well. So I think that he will be able to get it done this year. And then in terms of Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, I think that DeAndre Swift is the clear number one guy there. But we will see a couple of games like last year where Jamal Williams kind of just barrels his way into the end zone and kind of just sees a little bit more touches than you would hope if you did draft DeAndre Swift. So I like Jamal Williams as a late round flyer, but I think he has very little value unless Swift gets hurt. But again, running backs get hurt all the time. So
yeah, I think Swift is the clear number one too, but I liken it more to like an early career Kamara. Like DeAndre Swift, and we did the running back video a while ago, so this is off memory. I believe he only had 20, or excuse me, he had five games where he had 20 touches, and some of those were Jamal Williams injury games. So I don't think you're getting 20 touches consistently out of Swift, but again, we like that they come in the pass game, and that's why Kamara has been so valuable in a similar role. But overall, I think Williams, if you're just looking for touchdowns late in drafts, could make sense. But I think you and I are in agreement. It's over on the win total here. We do like a lot of pieces from this team. Kind of hard to believe the Detroit Lions. I might end up with multiple pieces from this team in fantasy drafts. But do you have anything else to add before we move on?
Yeah, real quick, we didn't really touch on TJ Hockenson. Hockenson's a guy that I kind of touted very highly last year. It didn't really work out, but he was still top 10 in points per game. I think that he could end up at some point in his career being a top five tight end. I'm just not sure that it is this year. But again, if Jameson Williams is out some serious time, maybe that does really help out TJ Hockenson and his target share inside the offense.
For sure. And last thing with Amon Ra, he plays in the slot. He runs a lot of underneath stuff that gels very well with Jared Goff's skill set, unlike Chark and Jameson, who are field stretchers where Goff has historically struggled. But before we get to our next team, let's talk about Underdog. We've teased it a bunch. We've been talking about their ADP rankings all throughout the show. And that's because Underdog is the engine of our offseason fantasy content right now. And this is not days of old where we had the dead season in May and June and we waited for training camp to start. Underdog has really livened the offseason with these drafts. And it is the single best place to play fantasy football this summer. They also just released their Best Ball Mania 3 tournament that has $10 million in total prizes. You just draft your team, that's it. There's no waivers, no trades, no in-season management. And Underdog is just going to give you the best score on your team each week of the season. And the highest score at the end of the year wins. It's that easy. Last year, the Best Ball Mania Championship team was drafted in June, so there's no reason to wait. Underdog doubles your first deposit up to $100 when you use the promo code AWESOMO as well. That's four entries into the Best Ball Mania 3. So head to underdogfantasy.com or to the App Store or just click the link in the video description below and sign up with the promo code AWESOMO today to take advantage of all of those positives. Let's dive in to the Minnesota Vikings, Nick. An interesting team. They've undergone a lot of shifts this offseason, especially in their coaching staff, their front office. They bring in Kevin O'Connell. He's the Rams offensive coordinator of the last two seasons. They bring in Wes Phillips. as their OC. He was the Rams tight ends coach for the last 3 years, coordinated the pass game last year. And they bring in Ed Donatell, Broncos DC from 2019 to 2021. He'll be the current DC of the Vikings this year. They have the front office changes. But the thing to me is they bring in all these new pieces in the coaching staff and front offense. They have essentially the same roster. They stick with Kirk Cousins. A lot of people thought they would try to trade him, move on. But they very much got the band back together. So to me, that kind of speaks to this regime thinks they can get something out of Kirk Cousins in the current offense. And it was the fault of the previous regime that they could never take that next step. Do you think that's possible with this current roster and the new coaching staff they brought in?
Yeah, I definitely think that that is possible. Now, I don't think that Kirk Cousins is miraculously going to become a top five quarterback in the NFL, but I do think that you could put some of the blame on the coaching staff. On paper, I think that they have one of the better offense in terms of skill players in the NFL, especially if Adam Thielen was able to stay healthy for a whole season, having Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. Now, they're not the best 1-2 punch at the wide receiver position in the NFL, but they are definitely up there. And they have Dalvin Cook, who, when he's healthy, is a top five back in the NFL. Not necessarily this crazy receiving back like Christian McCaffrey, Najee Harris, but he is able to get it done through the receiving game as well. They also have Alexander Mattison, who is one of the better backup running backs, in my opinion, one of the better handcuffs. Now, in best ball, I don't believe in handcuffing your own running back, but if you're talking about a regular fantasy football draft, if I'm drafting Dalvin Cook, I'm drafting Alexander Mattison every single time. I really like the Minnesota Vikings this year. I think that the issue with the Vikings is that Kirk Cousins is just not this prime time guy. When the lights shine super bright, right, in these big games, Kirk Cousins shrivels up. So I don't know if the Vikings will, you know, win a playoff game, but I do feel like they could make the playoffs this year. And their win total is at 9. I think they can go over that. And it must suck to be a part of the Rams, because your coaches are just getting stolen from you all the time, right? Like you said, Wes Phillips, the Rams tight end and pass coordinator, gone. Now the head coach of the Vikings, their offensive coordinator, the Rams offensive coordinator, Kevin O'Connell, gone. Like, imagine you get like a guy for like 1 or 2 years and then magically some guy who was the water boy gets picked up by another team for you. So that must just suck for Sean McVay. But hey, I think the Minnesota Vikings are definitely going to be a better team this year when compared to last year. And I think offensively, this is one of the better offensive units in the NFL. Their defense isn't amazing, but it's not that bad, right? It's not terrible.
They got better. Yeah, we're going to talk about their roster now. They definitely got better on defense, and that's where we saw them make a lot of investments, not just in the draft, but free agency. Yeah. They still have Danielle Hunter, who is kind of like their only good edge rusher, at least recently. They bring in Za'Darius Smith from Green Bay, who missed most of last year due to injury, but when healthy, he's been very productive. They invest a lot in the defensive backfield. They draft Andrew Booth. They draft Lewis Cine. Those are two strong defensive backs. And that's in addition to some of the other players they have. They had Pat Pete, who's going to be a veteran presence and hopefully can teach some of those young guys. Cam Dantzler is a guy that came out of Mississippi State who's actually shown a little bit. Harrison Smith is still there. They still have Eric Kendricks at linebacker. So it's still a pretty decent unit overall when you just look at their defense. And I think they have improved. Offense to me is fine. It's just not deep whatsoever. Like you mentioned Cousins at quarterback, Dalvin and Madison at running back, but then at receiver, like we saw Adam Thielen get hurt last year and try to play through it. They have nobody behind him with even a pulse at the position. Like KJ Osborne, BC Johnson, Amir Smith-Marset, these are fine role players. A lot of them just pure special teamers, but like you don't have the replacements for Adam Thielen if something happens to these guys. Well, you saw Irv Smith go down last year. They don't have any replacements on the roster for him if they were to lose him again. I mean, like Johnny Munn is their backup tight end. Offensive line has a lot invested in it. You saw them take Christian Darrisaw last year. Ezra Cleveland's a former pretty high draft pick. Same with Garrett Bradbury. But they're a team that is wildly underperformed. So I still think they're banking on the assumption that this coaching staff can get more out of the current players. Anything else to add with roster composition?
Yeah, like you said with the tight ends, Irv Smith was a guy that I was immensely high on last year. I was banging the drum. I was thinking, oh, Irv Smith's going to stay healthy. He's going to be good. And then obviously he doesn't stay healthy. But we did see other tight ends fill that role on the team. Now, Tyler Conklin is gone. I believe he is now on the Jets. So that's not great in terms of the Minnesota Vikings depth chart. But that does give me confidence that if Irv Smith is able to stay healthy, then maybe he has that year that I thought he was going to have last year. You got any thoughts on Irv Smith?
I like Irv Smith a lot. He's a receiving tight end. My main concerns are he's never really played a full complement of snaps, and that's going back to even his college days. You know, he played at Alabama, so it's not like Alabama has this luxury where they don't always have to use players in a full-time role because they recruit so well. But even Irv Smith's early career with the Vikings, he's not going to be on the field every single snap. Now, I think that's probably going to be the case again this year. That's not necessarily a bad thing. We see with tight ends like Gerald Everett and some of the other pure receivers, like Eric Ebron's kind of occupied that role where they're on the field for the meaningful snaps in terms of fantasy as pass catchers. So I'm not worried about Irv. He's still coming off the board pretty late for a guy I think that is going to play a consistent role just out of necessity. Outside of Jefferson and Thielen, like, they just don't have any other pass catchers of consequence. I think Irv has to be on the field for them if they want to win games.
Yeah, I also think that Osborne, while I don't think he's the most talented player, if Thielen or Jefferson were to go down, I feel like the best bet is that Osborne slots in there. Again, not an amazing player, but does have a decent amount of value going at pick 157 in my book. I don't know. You don't seem as confident in Osborne.
He needs an injury. Otherwise, he's a zero for you. Like, agreed. Two targets a game. At the receiver position for best ball, I generally don't draft based on injury just because they happen a lot less than tight end and running back. Like, if I'm drafting KJ Osborne, I'd like there to be like some contingency value to begin with or some standalone value regardless as the wide receiver three. But Minnesota, and maybe this could change. I mean, we have an entirely new coaching staff come in. Do they use three wide a lot more? Like, we just don't know. I think there's a couple things that suggest they will. The Rams did that a lot, but then at the same time, like, they just don't have the player personnel for it. Like, do we think KJ Osborne deserves to be on the field 90% snap share? I certainly do not, but I mean, who knows? It's a new coaching staff.
Yeah, it's all about usage, I guess, when you're looking
at that. So maybe you could take a flyer on him based on the upside. I kind of talked myself into it a little bit, but let's talk this win total. It's sitting at 9. I think that's about fair. Again, the NFC North is playing a relatively easy schedule. Not only is this a fairly winnable division, you got the Lions and the Bears, so you got a couple easy wins there. But AFC East is going to feature teams like the Jets. NFC East, you got teams like the Giants and the Commanders. Those are winnable games too. The Vikings are playing a second place schedule, so their one-offs are a little bit more difficult. You get the Saints from the NFC South. The NFC West, you're going to get the Cardinals. And then the AFC South, you draw the Colts, which is a fairly difficult opponent. So I don't see this as being a cakewalk. And when we compare this to the Bears and the Lions, I think the win total is a little more of a stay away for me. But any thoughts for you here?
Yeah, I would lean with the over, but I hate that it's 9 because I think it's probably going to end up pushing, right? I think they're probably a 9-win team. It may be 8 wins, but I would still lean with the over. I think they can win 9-10 games. Again, I don't think this is one of the more special teams in the NFL. I don't think they're going to screech their way into the playoffs and then make some huge noise in the NFC. I think the NFC is very top heavy, so that could lead to the Vikings squeaking into the playoffs. And I think over 9 wins, I think their win total is pretty fair, but I think it's going to end up pushing, but I'm still going to lean the over, but not something I would bet.
I agree with you. And then for fantasy purposes, we touched on, surprisingly, Osborne more than any other player really at this point, but I want to hit on a couple guys going really high. Dalvin Cook's coming off the board, ADP 10.4. Justin Jefferson even higher at 4.6. So in most drafts, you got to spend a top 5 pick on Justin Jefferson to get him right now. I actually have a lot of interest, not only in Irv Smith, who I guess we touched on too, but Adam Thielen coming off the board at pick 78. Again, this comes down to they just don't have anybody on the roster. Adam Thielen's north of 30 at this point in his career, but his production hasn't dropped off when he's been healthy. The issue is, we saw him sustain that ankle sprain last year, and he tried to gut it out. The dude's a warrior, but it definitely affected his efficiency. So Thielen, I think, is a guy you can kind of get at a value right now in offense, which is going to look different. We're not entirely sure what it's going to be. And if they're a lot pass heavier, and Thielen's the clear wide receiver too, man, there could be a lot of value for him here.
Yeah, I made a video a couple of weeks ago on the Best Ball channel. I don't remember exactly what it was called, but it was something about players that I'm targeting very heavily that go on a later round. And Adam Thielen's ADP has definitely moved. When I made that video a couple of weeks ago, his ADP was close to outside of the top 100. Now he's going inside of the top 80. I still like the value a lot. I still think Adam Thielen is going to put up huge numbers. The guy's just a touchdown machine. He scores a million touchdowns. Even with Justin Jefferson playing significantly more games than Adam Thielen, they scored the exact same amount of touchdowns. Kirk Cousins in the red zone is clearly looking for Adam Thielen, despite Adam Thielen not having this crazy build, right? Adam Thielen doesn't look like a guy that's going to score 10-plus touchdowns every year. But I think as long as he's healthy, it's a pretty safe bet that he will score over 10 touchdowns. And I think that Adam Thielen is going to surprise a lot of people because for some reason they just forgot how good Adam Thielen is. Maybe it's because of how old he is, right? Because everyone tries to push guys out the older they get. But this isn't 1980. This is 2022, right? You can play past your 30s.
I agree with you. And I would say for me, every single player that's on this roster, I'm probably just trying to get an ADP. Like, I don't think Kirk Cousins is undervalued. Dalvin Cook, you're spending a top 10 pick on. Justin Jefferson's top five, and I think it's certainly warranted. Madison kind of has this premium among handcuffs because we've seen the role he will play if Dalvin goes down. But honestly, I'm fine with Madison at his ADP. Osborne, I think after the show, I'll probably have to increase my exposure to a little bit just because the coaching staff changes. And same with Irv at pick 140. All kind of just guys I'm picking up at ADP, not trying to get drastically overweight to. That for me is Thielen. Anything else to add on the players?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that I would not be looking to get overweight to have a bunch of stacks of the Minnesota Vikings, right? They're just not that super exciting, but I do think that they're a relatively safe stack that is going to have some solid big games, especially if Justin Jefferson is able to build on what he did last year. Then obviously he's going to be able to just carry Kirk Cousins to a bunch of good games.
Agreed. All right. Green Bay Packers. 11 win total. They have Matt LaFleur back. He started there in 2019. He's their head coach. They have to replace Nathaniel Hackett as OC. They go with Adam Stenovich. He formerly coordinated the run game. He's coached the Packers offensive line for a bit there. So he is an in-house replacement. Defensive coordinator Joe Barry, he started in 2021. So he's still there. He was previously with the Rams. The only real change is going to be Stenovich. And with Aaron Rodgers running a lot of the show here, I'm not expecting drastic changes in offensive schematics. Maybe they're just a little run heavier, but they've kind of been trending that direction slowly year over year anyway. So again, not expecting massive changes. Player personnel is where we see a lot of changes. They are able to get Rodgers under contract, but they lose Davante Adams. That is the biggest change for this team overall. They do bring in Christian Watson. He was drafted on day two, very early in the second round. They traded up for him, and they traded a lot to get him, 2 second-round picks. They also take a couple late-round guys in Romeo Doubs out of Nevada, Samori Toure out of Nebraska. What do you think of this offense overall post Davante Adams? Do you view it being much run heavier than we saw last year?
Yeah, I think this is definitely going to be a more run heavy offense. And I think that Aaron Jones is greatly benefiting from the fact that Davante Adams is gone, not just because I think he's going to see more rushing opportunity, because AJ Dillon is still there, right? AJ Dillon is a bigger running back. He's still going to be getting these opportunities. But I think Aaron Jones is going to greatly be impacted by the fact that I think he's going to be seeing a lot more receptions go his way, a lot more targets go his way, because Davante Adams is no longer there. Davante Adams was this safety net for Aaron Rodgers, and typically the safety net can't run 50 yards down the field and catch a touchdown, but that was the safety net, right? Every time he threw the ball to Davante Adams, it seemed like Davante Adams was going to catch it regardless of where it was. And now I think that he's going to have to dump the ball off a lot more to Aaron Jones. I think that Aaron Jones, while he's getting drafted at pick 20.5, while he may have burned a lot of people last year, I was very high in Aaron Jones. He did kind of burn me because he wasn't that top five guy that I thought he could be. I think this year, while people are falling out of love with him, right, he's not a first round pick. He's almost a second round, or he's a late second round pick in fantasy football drafts. I think Aaron Jones right now is coming at a huge discount, and I think he's going to outscore what he did last year. And I am still very much out on AJ Dillon. I think he's going to see some work, but I just don't know how you can take the second running back on a team at pick 72, where you know he's definitely behind Aaron Jones unless there's an injury, right? There's just no way he's going to out-touch Aaron Jones, at least in my book.
We're in lockstep with this. And let's do, you know, worst case scenario for Jones, best case scenario for Dillon. Maybe it's close to a 50-50 split. Aaron Jones is still occupying all the third downs. He's getting a majority of the receiving work, and a lot of that's going to come around the end zone. So even though Dillon might be the bulldozer on the goal line, Aaron Jones has a massive receiving role in the red zone, which should lead to touchdowns as well. So we're in lockstep on Jones. I do believe he's undervalued. Like you said, I like Dillon as a player, and I think he does have standalone value with the contingency plan. If Jones goes down, Dillon's going to skyrocket. But at pick 72, you almost need that to happen for him to pay off his ADP, which is tough. And that kind of brings me to the roster as a whole, which Green Bay is treated a little bit confusing, I think. You know, they bring back Rodgers. They don't bring back Adams. I think based on their salary cap situation, they had to pick between one of the two. But part of the reason is they have so much money tied up in Aaron Jones. They have a lot of money tied up in David Bakhtiari, who's been injured. And their offensive line has declined. You know, they've been able to get by with players like John Runyon, who are day three picks, filling gaps for this team. You do have Elgin Jenkins moving out to tackle. I think that's solid, but there's still question marks. Can Josh Myers improve his play, a rookie from a year ago? Can Royce Newman, former player from Ole Miss, improve? On defense, you have pieces coming and going. They just re-signed Jair Alexander. Love that. They have Eric Stokes, who they drafted last year. And Rasul Douglas has actually had a little bit of a career resurgence. They also have Amos and Savage in the secondary, both phenomenal players there. But, you know, then on the defensive line, Rashawn Gary has really taken a step forward. Preston Smith's been solid. But the Packers spent two first-rounders on a defensive tackle, they spent one pick on defensive tackle Devontae Wyatt and one on off-ball linebacker Quay Walker. Like, to me, when I'm in the draft process and you're trying to surround Rodgers with talent, why not trade up in the first round, get a premier receiver, or wait in the second round and get a guy like Sky Moore late? I just don't see the reason why you trade from the 50s and go up to get Christian Watson, who's very clearly not in that first tier, but he's essentially drafted like it. So the roster building has been confusing to me from the start. The issue is this division's just so bad. The Packers projected for 11 wins. Like, I have to pick the over by default.
Yeah, the roster construction for the Packers has been confusing for years. Like, they draft Jordan Love instead of a wide receiver. Things haven't been great for these Packers fans, but I agree with you. The fact that the division that they're in is this bad, the fact that the NFC isn't amazing, you almost have to take the over. But again, I hate how they do this. Why are they putting it at 11? Why can't it be 10.5? Because again, this is another one that I see as potentially pushing, just like the Vikings. So I don't feel very strongly on the over, but I would lean that way.
And again, the Packers do play in a very easy division. Their crossovers are winnable, AFC East, NFC East, but their one-offs are hard. Whereas, you know, a team like the Lions, they're getting a fourth-place schedule that includes teams like the Panthers. The Packers are getting the Buccaneers. The Packers are getting the Rams. The Packers are, you know, they're going to be getting the AFC South champion Titans, who I think might be a little worse than the Colts, but that's neither here nor there. The Packers are also losing a home game. They're playing the Giants in London. So, I mean, it's not as easy of a schedule as some of the other teams in this division. But again, when you get the Lions twice, the Bears twice, you get the Jets, like you're getting the Commanders, the Giants, those are winnable games. And a lot of other divisions just don't have those. So the Packers, if I were betting, it would be over for me. But again, I'm sticking with the Bears and sticking with the Lions. These are probably stayaways for the Vikings and the Packers win total wise. But let's talk fantasy here. There's a lot of opportunity available for this team. Nobody's going at a premium outside of Aaron Jones. Even Aaron Rodgers coming off the board just inside the top 100. But Lazard, Cobb, Christian Watson, Amari Rodgers, if you want to include him, last year's third round pick, very affordable. Is there anyone you particularly like?
Yeah, I think it's almost disrespectful where Aaron Rodgers is going. Now, I don't even have him ranked inside the top 12, so maybe I'm being disrespectful as well, because the back-to-back MVP going close to pick 100, I understand he doesn't have that rushing upside. I understand he's not Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, one of these rushing quarterbacks. Now, I'm not saying that Lamar and Kyler are only good at rushing. You get what I mean, though. One of those rushing upside. But some people will misunderstand what I say. Be like, oh, you think Lamar's a running back, Nick, you dumbass? People will say things like that. So Aaron Rodgers, he's not that, but he's still the back-to-back MVP. He loses Devontae Adams, sure, that's a big miss, but he's still Aaron Rodgers. So I think people are discrediting him. I don't think he's going to have this crazy top 5 year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes easily inside the top 10. And then with where these guys are going, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Randall Cobb was the number one wide receiver for this team. And this man is going outside of the top 200 picks. Again, you don't need to heavily invest in Randall Cobb to get him. He's going outside the top 200. And I think that there's a pretty good chance in my book that he's just the number one guy because Aaron Rodgers, for some reason, loves Randall Cobb. So I think Randall Cobb is being drastically undervalued. And I think where Christian Watson is going is a little bit crazy for just how, like, his ceiling is really high, but his floor is almost awful. Like, he might not even be a top two receiver on this team in terms of targets.
I agree with you. Ultimately, when I break this down, I think we know exactly what Alan Lazard is. I don't think he's going to be a difference maker as the wide receiver one. So at pick 102.5, I'm not really in on him. I'll be significantly underweight. Randall Cobb going outside the top 200, ridiculous. You'll give me him. I'll take some Amari Rodgers for the same reason, just because that's a guy that was drafted on day two. Like, he has some draft capital behind him, only a little bit less than Christian Watson. My plan with Christian Watson going at pick 99 is to take him when he falls. So if I could get him at pick 105, 106, I'm going to try to get some Christian Watson just because he's the player we've seen the least. There's the most untapped potential with him. Again, I don't think it's likely. It's a guy that came out of an FCS run-heavy school that never produced in college until he was old, which is a problem. But they did invest in him, so there is an outside chance. Honestly, outside of Randall Cobb, I think Robert Tonyan might be my favorite player to target at tight end. he has the ACL tear, season-ending injury, but it didn't happen late in the year. I mean, it happened about at the midway point, so Tonyan has extra weeks to heal. They don't have anybody of consequence behind him. Like, Mercedes Lewis is still there. He's basically a blocker at this point in his career. I think Tonyan has a lot of touchdown upside at pick 133. Do you agree?
Yeah. Tonyan, when he did have that big year, not last year, but the year prior, it was because of the touchdowns. But now the biggest competitor to who's going to be potentially stealing the touchdowns away from him is gone. Devontae Adams is no longer there. So when they're in the red zone, if they aren't running the ball with the wrecking ball A.J. Dillon or handing it to Aaron Jones, throwing it to Aaron Jones, I think Tonyan has the opportunity to score a crazy amount of touchdowns. And with how much that could carry a player, he could finish inside the top five at the tight end position, be nowhere near the top 10 in receptions or targets or even receiving yards just because he scores so many touchdowns. So Robert Tonyan's a guy that I think a lot of people are sleeping on. I think myself included, I could definitely see him finishing inside of the top 10 and even inside the top five. Now, obviously, that's an outside shot in finishing inside the top five, but I think it's possible. So I like him a decent amount as well, like you said.
All right, Nick, we said it all. The divisions, we were over on the Detroit Lions, under on the Chicago Bears. Both the Minnesota Vikings and Packers were stayaways, but maybe plays towards the over just based on a bad division. They play in a lot of gimme wins. But let us know in the comment section what you guys think of these teams. Who are we too high on? Who are we too low on? What players do you particularly like on Underdog Fantasy? He is Nick Lepre. You can follow him on Twitter at Notorious Fantasy. I'm Matt Gajewski. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Gajewski. Thank you guys for watching and stay tuned for all the future division previews. We will see you again next time.